This is Marketplace After the Bell. I'm Scott Jagow, and I'm here to make sense of what happened this week in business and the economy. It's Friday, May 22nd. Maybe you've had this experience before. You're driving down the road, cruising comfortably at 55, when all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, the speed limit drops to 35. The guy in front of you slams on his brakes, and you almost ram right into him. Or how about this one? Your drive to work used to be 15 minutes, but since they've added 5 new speed bumps and 2 new stoplights, it takes a half hour. My point is that there are rules of the road. They're designed to keep people safe. But the rules change, and they don't always seem reasonable. Does the speed limit really have to be that low? Do they really need 5 speed bumps in a row? Well, maybe there were 2 horrible accidents on that stretch of road because people were driving too fast. The tricky part about making rules is allowing people freedom, but not excessive freedom. I bring this up because this was a week full of rulemaking. Rules about carbon emissions, rules on fuel economy, rules about credit cards and executive pay. The recession has us rethinking the regulation of just about anything that might have caused the financial meltdown. But we have to be careful not to overreact, because trying to prevent one kind of problem often opens the door to a different kind. The rules of the road should be effective, but also fair and flexible.
Marketplace, providing you what you need to know about business and economics on air and online. Explore everything Marketplace has to offer, from explainers on technical terms to stories on personal finance at marketplace.org.
We begin this week hearing from a behavioral economist. Dan Ariely spends his time thinking about how people and markets behave. He wrote a book called Predictably Irrational. I think that says it all. He compares rulemaking to how engineers design our roads. They actually expect drivers to make mistakes.
Think about something like the margin on the side of the road, right? That's just precaution. If we thought that people are rational and driving correctly, we would never pave a part of the road that nobody should be driving on. The same thing holds for the little line that go brrr. Again, they shouldn't be there. And you know that the people who design highways actually play with the width of the lanes to control the speeding that people would take. And we basically give people freedom to make mistakes. And sometimes there are terrible accidents, but often people make mistakes and don't get into accidents. And I think the same thing about irrationality also works in the mental world. You would basically build buffers. You would build things that are equivalent to the margins and too much width for the cars. And basically, well, this way, let us make mistakes from time to time and don't bring down the economy. But we did the opposite. We created leveraging to such high degrees that it's as if you're packing traffic with 100% capacity and no speed limit and no margin and no anything. And therefore, when one mistake happens, the whole thing collapsed.
Leaving a margin for error. Unfortunately for Detroit's carmakers, there's no room for error left. They boxed themselves into a corner over the years, and now the government is making the rules. This week, President Obama proposed new standards for fuel economy, so that by 2016, the auto industry will have to average 35 miles per gallon. This is going to force changes to the way cars are made and what's available to car buyers. But the auto companies say they support these new rules. Here's Janet Babin.
The government estimates the changes will add $1,300 to a vehicle's price tag. But analyst John Wolkonowicz with IHS Global Insight says it could cost more than that. He says automakers will be hard-pressed to make bigger vehicles that meet the new standards.
Consumers are not going to be able to get the vehicles they want, and they're going to be paying more for the vehicles they do get. I think we could see increases as much as $7,000 on some larger vehicles.
Still, automakers say they're on board, and the Obama administration says the added cost will be a wash. Vehicles will be more fuel efficient, so consumers will use less gasoline.
And that really is the goal of these new standards. It's one part of the administration's climate change strategy. Another part was a bill approved in the House this week. The centerpiece of the Waxman-Markey bill is a cap-and-trade system for carbon emissions. We've been hearing that phrase, cap-and-trade, for years. This week, it was time to understand it better. And we got help from Sarah Gardner at our sustainability desk. She talked to Kai Rizdahl.
The idea is to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide we put out into the atmosphere.
Right.
So Congress would cap or limit the total amount of greenhouse gas emissions every year.
All right. And trade?
The trade part. What's traded are the rights to emit those greenhouse gases under the legal limits.
Okay. How do you trade a right, though? I mean, you can trade oil, you can trade stocks. Trading a right, I don't get it.
Okay. Well, you can think of that right as, say, a license to pollute. And then you just turn that license into a tradable commodity, like you said, just like oil or pork bellies. And major polluters will receive some of these carbon permits for free, but they'll also have to buy some of them at auction. So they'll have these permits in hand, and then they'll be able to start trading them. They will trade them depending on their emissions needs from year to year.
What's the point, though, of trading them?
Instead of a top-down government mandate, the idea is to let the market work and find the cheapest, most efficient way to get to these reductions. Mm-hmm. Here's how it might work. Say you've got Joe's Power and Light Company, and Joe has a fairly new coal-fired power plant, and he needs to run it full steam. He needs more carbon permits.
Because he needs to pollute more.
That's right.
Okay.
He needs to find them on the market. He can then go to the market and buy more carbon permits from, say, Sam's Power and Light, because Sam is perhaps already investing in solar. He's emitting less and he has permits to spare.
Okay. What's the incentive, though, for polluters to eventually clean things up?
Okay, this is key. The emissions cap is going to get tighter and tighter as the years go on.
So there will be right, okay.
There are fewer in circulation, supply shrinks. Theoretically, these permits are getting more expensive. And if you're still out there polluting like crazy, it's going to take a lot of money to keep that up. So there's your incentive to clean up your act.
But cap and trade is only one part of this huge, complex climate bill. In fact, as I pointed out on my blog at marketplace.org this week, the bill needs to be simplified if it's going to be effective. Again, it's that issue of too many rules of the road. In Washington, that almost always leads to a major traffic jam.
Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there. With open arms and open eyes, yeah. Whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there. I'll be there.
This is Marketplace After the Bell for May 22nd. I'm Scott Jagow. Washington's also trying to protect the people and the economy from another disaster. Everything's on the table, from credit default swaps to executive pay. You could think of it as a fight over the future of capitalism. And it could be a nasty fight. Here's more from Steve Henn.
Imagine for a second you're a consumer advocate like Ed Mrzewinski from the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. You're convinced that whacked-out executive pay incentives on Wall Street helped cause this crisis.
Calling it executive pay is almost a misnomer because junior bankers were receiving million-dollar bonuses.
You argue that bankers were routinely paid bonuses up front for taking huge, long-term risks. In your corner, you have 200 million angry Americans and lots of financial heavyweights like Paul Volcker, the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, who agrees with you. You might think that putting some limits on how Wall Street structures paychecks would be a slam dunk. But just imagine who you're up against.
It will be every major and minor business industry in every publicly traded company.
Scott Talbot's a lobbyist with the Financial Services Roundtable. He acknowledges that bonus incentives were a problem, but
we think that the best place to set compensation is by compensation boards.
And most high-tech, pharmaceutical, and oil industry executives agree. And this is just one relatively minor issue in a package of reforms the administration's considering. Harvard Law professor Elizabeth Warren chairs the Congressional Oversight Panel for the bank bailout. She's pushing for a financial product safety commission that could try to pull deceptive mortgages or credit cards off the market before they blow up in consumers' faces.
Those consumer financial products, ultimately the dangerous ones, the ones full of tricks and traps, they destabilize this entire economic system.
But industry lobbyists like Talbot argue there are already too many regulators in the mix.
Banks are also lining up against credit card reform. Congress passed new rules on credit card fees and rates and policies this week. And the industry's threat is this. Go ahead, make your rules, but credit will be harder to get and it'll be more expensive. But will it really? Jeremy Hobson talked to both sides of this case, starting with David Robertson, publisher of the credit card trade journal, The Nilson Report.
We're going to start seeing a drop in the number of credit cards in the United States, and we'll start seeing some different kinds of loyalties firm up.
Robertson says new fees of about $30 a year will push many consumers to regional financial institutions for credit cards, places that have many relationships with their customers, from mortgages to checking accounts.
They're making money from you in a variety of different ways, and therefore they don't have to get as fat, if you will, from you as a bank that's issuing a credit card to you, and that's the only relationship that they have with you.
Not everyone thinks today's Senate action will lead to fewer credit cards long term. Chris Ambruster is a research analyst at Al Frank, a fund that invests in credit card companies.
As consumers feel more comfortable using these credit cards, more comfortable with the fee structures, as they become more transparent, I think generally there will be a larger amount of money that is flowing through these credit cards.
And potentially more irrational behavior. So, we have all these new rules in different areas, but we also need a better understanding of what went wrong in the financial system. You could argue we need to know that before we start making rules, but all of these things are happening at the same time. For example, this week, Congress passed another bill that creates a Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. It's something like the 9/11 Commission. Kai Rizdahl talked to one of the bill's sponsors, Kent Conrad of North Dakota, about what he expects to find.
I believe there was serious financial fraud in some of the dealings, some of the major enterprises. I believe there's criminal wrongdoing.
Obviously, you'll be looking at Wall Street and what some of the folks up there did. Are you going to look equally as hard at what happened in Washington? Regulatory agencies there, some of the things Congress might have done?
Absolutely. All of us need to have our actions scrutinized. And I would include Congress in that. What mistakes were made here? What were mistakes that were made by major financial firms, by regulatory agencies? Certainly the rating agencies, they were asleep at the switch. Where did the breakdowns occur that we need to fix and make certain never happen again?
So we're back to the rules of the road. There were regulations in place. Some of them were like rolling through a stop sign, not always enforced. Some were just bad rules, like too many speed bumps. It may be difficult to change the rules and expect a different result. The financial industry could find a way around the new ones. But perhaps the guiding principle should be, just like building highways, leave some room for error without letting people do whatever they please.
May the wind take your troubles away. May the wind take your troubles away.
That's Marketplace After the Bell for this week. I'm Scott Jagow. I'll be back next Friday afternoon to make sense of what happened in business and the economy. Thanks for listening, and drive safe this weekend.
American Public Media.